listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. So wonderful to be here. So wonderful to have you listening, whether live or on replay. And we've got one of our favourite guests here this morning. So without any ado, Amy Brooke, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Rodney.
Now, I like to call you an authoress because no one uses the word anymore. And you're a wonderful authoress of children's books. How do people buy your books? And, of course, you've got that great book, 100 Days. Tell us about how they buy your books before we get into it, because I know people will do it at the end again, but I want people to know that they can buy these wonderful books. So wonderful gift books for grandchildren and for friends, right? How do they get your books?
Oh, that's very nice of you, Roddy. Well, actually, after we spoke last time, we were talking about the Swiss system, which I'd love to talk about this morning, because I think there are ways we could achieve political reform very quickly. Last time, some people came on board and bought them, but my website, which was wonderful, but the next day, people got upset and said they couldn't actually buy them online. They should go to my website. I'll tell you that, but I'll tell you what happened. My website is www, and it's just Amy Brooke, AmyBrooke.co.nz. But the trouble was that it was always playing up because it was hosted by a very old or complex system of some sort. And it sometimes people just couldn't get through. Some did, some didn't. So I've had it recited somewhere else. So if people go on board and I want to buy them, they can. And that's very nice because I was so long blacklisted in New Zealand by the children's writing mafia, I have to say. I was told I was finished. I was rung at the time by the literary editor of Listener saying, we'll make sure that you're never published in Listener. The left are actually extremely vindictive. They're very good haters, but you probably know that. So that scotched most of my chances of getting the books to children, which was the real thing, which is a shame because children and parents did love them. And I got some very good reviews until the teachers' unions and others found out that my Dominion, the person who was writing the Dominion columns at the time, was the same person who was writing the children's books. And then they said, they told my distributor, you can't distribute them anymore. We're not going to stock them. That actually, my distributor said to me, or they just hate you. And I said, I don't know them. How can they hate me? And she said, because of your Dominion columns. And they said, we're going to take it out on her children's writing. And by heavens, they did. But we need to get on to that. I'd like to talk about the 100 days or a couple of relevant points. But something just occurred to me, Rodney. It's very interesting. I happened to come across a reference the other day to Roy Kerr. Do you remember him? He was a mathematician and astronomer.
Yes.
Well, it was a very interesting
probably one of our most famous scientists.
Well, this will really interest you then, if you may well remember it, that he said that if we entered a black hole at the right angle, we would come out in an alternative universe.
Yes.
If we went into a black hole at the right angle, we would come out into an alternative universe. And I'm actually wondering if we have. We've definitely reached Rodney dear, we've reached the age of unreason. For example, the sheer absurdity of theories going round, many being inflicted on children, which were being backed up by the hierarchies, and certainly not elite, that word's being misused all the time. The utter absurdity, for example, of a man claiming another man is his husband or his wife. It's certainly not factual. It may be legal, but it's absolutely nonsense. And what's really happened is, this is what I'm thinking of particularly, is the moral norms which actually uphold a society, as they go, for example, violence, crime, drug-taking, sexual promiscuity, the whole transgender nonsense, and push for abortion, of killing unborn babies and just saying, you know, it's a women's reproductive rights, when it's an absolute horror. What the Ministry of Education is doing in schools, actually encouraging children to be sexually promiscuous. Have we gone into a black hole, or have we come out to an alternative universe? I mean, not literally, but you know what I mean.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. The other one I keep having is, you know, we ain't in Kansas anymore, and that we are sort of Alice in Wonderland, where everything's topsy-turvy. Just mentioning Roy Kerr, I remembered reading about him. He was at the University of Canterbury when I was there, but he was very, very quiet man and never, blew his trumpet, but he grew up, I think, in Geraldine and then shifted to Christchurch, and he was a genius, and he was discovered to be a genius. And this is what, I just got to read you this, because it's just so amazing about, you know, you think New Zealand is the backwater, but think of this. There's a famous physicist called Subramanian Chandrasekhar. I can't pronounce his name. I so apologize to him. He's a Nobel laureate. And he said this about Roy Kerr. In my entire scientific life, extending over 45 years, the most shattering experience has been the realization that an exact solution of Einstein's equations of general relativity, discovered by the New Zealand mathematician Roy Kerr, provides the absolutely exact representation of untold numbers of massive black holes that populate the universe. So imagine being a Nobel laureate and writing in 1983 that your 45 years of being a scientist, nothing shattered you more than what a boy born in Geraldine or somewhere did with his maths. So when he was talking about going through a black hole at the right angle, he wasn't talking like a imaginative science fiction writer. He knew about black holes. He's still alive.
And look what he said.
He's still alive.
He's still alive?
Oh, yes, he's 90.
Is he really?
Yes. He was born in Kurau, and he's retired from the University of Canterbury. He got the Albert Einstein Medal, the Rutherford Medal, the Crayford Prize, the Oscar Clean Medal. He's amazing. His 1960 thesis I'm just reading was Equations of Motion and General Relativity. But we're off topic. But you brought Roy Kerr. I just think he's amazing because no one's heard of him. And he's like Ernest Rutherford. But
we've produced some absolutely stunning New Zealanders, but where are they now? Nelson College let us down badly because Rutherford, on his deathbed, actually donated money to the college. And when they wanted to build a marae for Maori and Samoan some years back, they sold the Rutherford. They've been coasting along the Rutherford memorabilia, but they sold it. The old boys managed to rescue one painting, I think, and put it somewhere where the college couldn't get their hands on it again. But we owe Rutherford so much. It was
yes.
Where are our great thinkers? I was thinking about Professor Blakelock. I think was he the Latin professor at Auckland? What a fine mind he had. But where are the people standing up now? Well, the left used to stand for the working man. It doesn't now. The left stands for destroying democracy, really. But the real trouble is that the lack of courage of what should be our conservatives. National, for example, is in many ways more National Party, just as wing as Labour.
What I've concluded, Amy, is that there's a group, I don't know, I suppose Marxist leftists, and they're hell-bent on destroying Western civilization and creating a chaos. They're extremely well-funded, and conservatives and left-wing people go along, la-di-da-di-da-di-da, la-di-da, oh yeah, no, that seems reasonable. Oh yeah, no, that seems reasonable. And you know the scary thing is? I put myself in that camp up until quite recently.
Oh, that's when you suddenly began to realize that there was a God, because the presence of evil was so prevalent and spreading. You wouldn't be the first one. Was that what you're referring to?
Yes, but also I struggled for a long time because I didn't believe that there could be people spreading ideas hell-bent on destroying humanity, like actually killing people. And funny enough, and you brought it home to me really hard just yesterday, because there's a proposal by ACT to extend euthanasia.
Oh, that's shocking. Yeah, David Seymour is very strange. He's very culpable, but and David Farrow was backing it. He thought it was fine. And I said, no, it's not the slippery slope. It's an absolute train wreck. Some countries overseas haven't endorsed it at all. Where they have, as in Canada, it's absolutely appalling. The criteria get extended all the time, even just to mental health or not feeling very good. And people, elderly people in rest homes are being told that it's very expensive to keep them there. And it would be very nice, actually, if they would just choose euthanasia. Canada is appalling. But I also read something
it
very
is
strange.
Appalling.
I'd like to follow up.
It's appalling. And do you know something, Amy? I was in favour of it. How shocking is that? I was.
Well, no. Someone approached me and said I'd like to support you, but I favour euthanasia because my mother died so very painfully. I can see why people think that they don't want to see someone they love very much dying in great pain, but that's where palliative care should be properly funded.
But also,
and
of
people
course,
should be supported.
But also, of course, that's the Trojan horse, right? That's the clever thing. Everywhere you look, it's clever things because it starts off, this is a slippery slope, and it exists because they start off and saying, well, look, this man's gay, born gay probably. We shouldn't lock him up. He should be able to be who he is, right? And you say to yourself,
he wasn't born.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. Next minute, marriage, adoption, woman can become men, and we know the next thing's going to be underage. It won't be an age of consent. This is where it'll head. It's the same thing with euthanasia, where they start out and they say, look, poor Nana's in horrific pain. We just want to ease. And you say, oh, okay, they'll put safeguards around it. But bit by bit, those safeguards will be removed. And Nana will be in a retirement village. And the son, who's a selfish guy because he's under 40, I shouldn't say that, says, gee, mum, have you thought of this?
We're raising up our money.
Have you thought of this?
I know. I've met some very selfish children. Adult children, it's quite appalling. There's something else that's interesting too, Rodney. Well, two things come out of this, but one is that we should stop calling it euthanasia and call it assisted suicide. But I did come across something recently. I was wondering if they use the same injection they use to execute people in the United States. And I came across a statement which needs exploring, and they said that if they're going to kill someone, if they're going to kill someone with their consent, even if it's a pressured consent, that they actually inject with a sedative beforehand so the death looks very peaceful. But someone said actually that's agonising because that starts to make people feel as if they've been waterboarded. It has an effect that it's just not publicised at all before they're actually put to death, that these people are in agony and they can't show up. This needs to be researched because if so, it's criminal. But the other thing is it all starts, Mother Teresa said, and I believe it is, look at Kamala Harris in the States and the Pope backing Kamala Harris, and then the Pope seems to have gone quite mad. And the church leaders are letting their people down too, and that's something we should really talk about. But Mother Teresa said it starts with abortion. And I think it does. I think a country that can deliberately kill its own children in the womb and Planned Parenthood, which I think, Rodney, is involved in those appalling DVDs that are being shown, videos being shown in school to children that you've been objecting to,
yes.
Thank God, encouraging children just to have sex, just get on with it, you know, get on with it, get it over with. These are being shown in schools because some teachers don't like to teach sex education, good for them, and some dodge it, and others just love it, and they're showing children how to have sex just to go ahead. This is, of course, quite criminal, and the Ministry of Education is now become basically a criminal body, and I'm not exaggerating on so many fronts one can state this.
Oh, I don't understand how teachers aren't charged for what they're teaching kids, because they're teaching kids it's indecent. It's like grooming them. You can't be...
What do you mean charged? Sorry, what do you mean charge
again,
drop?
If I sat down with a 13-year-old girl,
yeah,
and showed her how to put a condom on a penis, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'd be arrested.
Well, it's been done in schools for a long time.
They used to use
bananas at Nelson College. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're thinking, how do you get away with that? And you're right about...
It's Lennon's Useful Fools.
It's Lennon's Useful Fools.
I've known good teachers that simply persuaded people. You know, Henry Ford said, thinking is very hard work, which is why so few people actually indulge in it. And people seem to take so easily guidance from people above, oh, yes, this is the way to do it. And if they have some misgivings at all, they're talked out of it. You know, the old thing, saying if you want to destroy the West, you attack the institutions, and the schools, of course, were right online. If you actually get my book, The 100 Days, Claiming Back New Zealand, What Can We Done, and How to Manage Our Politicians, really, how to control them, you'll see there's a whole chapter on why sex education was introduced in schools, and it was done to destroy the children and to really, really help destroy society. And I'm not making this up. It took me months and many, many months of research to track it all back and find out what was happening. But euthanasia, so much abortion. From abortion, everything else follows. We even have the Pope now saying, less of two evils, vote for Kamala Harris. That's great.
Oh, he didn't, did he?
Lesser of two evils. We have a Pope that seems to have gone quite mad. He's now saying that any country, I'd like to talk about the church leaders because they're not doing their job either. And we know what they should
be doing. Let's talk about the church leaders.
Well, before we do, the Pope's at the moment saying he's upset a lot of traditional Catholics, quite rightly. They're fighting back, which is great. Trying to ban Latin worldwide. Which will help that any country to actually change the actual vernacular, change the language. Latin managed to keep things on target because you couldn't change the Latin. But if you can now teach worldwide in the language of the country, you can gradually change the meaning of Scripture and change the meaning of whatever it is, the meaning of the Mass, whatever the prayers are offered in the Mass and so on. And I think he wanted to change the Our Father. But he's actually saying that any country that turns back illegal immigrants... is committing a mortal sin. But the Vatican isn't letting them in. The Vatican's very, very careful about whom it lets in. And the Pope seems to be prioritising global warming, which is an absolute scam above everything else. Interesting. But if you want to talk about the church leaders, I'm very happy to. They've signed this, they've tried to prevent David Seymour's treaty bill in an effort to clarify what's happening with what the Treaty of Waitangi actually says. They're trying to prevent it even going to select committee. My heavens, that's a totalitarian attitude, isn't it?
And more crazily, I'm no scholar of Christian thought, but they declare the treaty written between by men and signed by men, a sacred document.
I know, it was ridiculous. I'm afraid they're pretty bad off in New Zealand.
How can you be a Christian leader and declare an agreement? You can say it's an important document, but it can't be sacred.
No, of course not. I'm afraid they've pretty much been... We're not a great nation of thinkers anymore, Rodney.
No.
The deterioration in education from the 1960s onwards, you know your favourite person, Professor Margaret Dalziel.
Yes.
I read a Landfall some years well after she wrote this article. I came across an article in Landfall, which was at that time still a pretty reputable literary magazine. And she spoke about the whole turnaround of education in the 1960s, and she said it was a disaster in the making. And she's quite right. And she said to confuse teachers and totally undereducated children and New Zealanders. And we have a lot of them in Parliament. And this is the trouble. Compared to countries like Switzerland, we're not the smart people. And there's some things, reforms we could... I think the so-called ordinary man and woman, they're never ordinary, often has a much greater insight into what's happening in the country than some of our leaders. For example, I know quite a few part Maori who say that the ones who are putting the pressure on the politicians are getting their own way, don't speak to them at all. but they're always the ones the politicians listen to. And I look at the way that Seymour's efforts to... Christopher Luxon has no right to bind all national. He should stop acting like a born-to-rule politician. He's simply the temporary chairman of a party, and he should be taking on views on board the views of all in his party, but he overrules them. Simeon Brown is the outstanding intellect, as far as I can see, and he's the one who, of course, immediately reversed the marifications of names of government departments and institutions. He reversed his so that we can now understand it's the Transport Association, not whatever, it's a walker or a canoe or something beforehand. The others aren't, and Winston's been derelict on there. He should be keeping his word. But they've hijacked Seymour's bill to say that everyone is equal except now Hapu Idiwi. Is that interesting? The government of New Zealand has full power to govern and make full power to make laws, etc. But then the Crown recognises the rights of Hapu and Iwi. Hapu is a simple small group of Māori when they signed, and the Crown will respect those rights. These rights differ from the rights everyone has a reasonable expectation to enjoy only when they're specified in legislation. Treaty settlement. So we're going on. I'm afraid Luxon is not an asset to the National Party.
No.
As the Prime Minister.
No. And what we've lost is that ability to reason. This is from the 1960s onwards. That ability to reason and debate and to think through a position and logically follow it to a conclusion. And
absolutely right.
Luxon and the media and the bureaucratic class are all classics at this, because it's all about feeling and emotion. And they create words that create a feeling and emotion, but no argument.
It's a weapon.
Or it's a weapon.
That's quite... Well, the media are absolutely corrupt. For example, we know now countries overseas are abandoning net zero as fast as they can. Nicola Willis said something absolutely ridiculous the other day about global warming, and she's the one who reprimanded Maureen Pugh, is it?
Yes.
Who had spoken with Dr. Gerrit van der Lingen, who we had the Summer Sound Symposium 1 year, actually analysing why the global warming scare alarmant was an absolute scam and what's happening. We may well be, actually now, we have had a brief period of warming, but it's got nothing whatsoever to do with CO2, which has never, ever been proven to promote global warming. In fact, it follows it. And did you know, I didn't know till yesterday, that about June, in South America, which was very, very cold, the sea actually froze off Chile. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
The sea froze. But we're getting very cold. I think we probably are moving back now, as Gerrit and others maintained. But Willis has been tackled. The Climate Change Commission are doing a shocking job. Some very, very good people are producing some very good material to send to them, and they're taking no notice of it at all. And Willis said that, when Maureen Pugh tried to argue, another National Party member who was told to shut up, basically, when she tried to say, well, we're not so sure we do have CO2 causing global warming or something to that effect, Willis said, oh, we'll have to send her a couple of books. So the conversation is amazing because Willis is wrong. And she said that the reason why we're backing this is because we signed the Paris Accord. John Key at it again, of course. And she said, and we have to keep in good, something to the effect that we have to keep in good faith with our trading partners. What a great excuse for loading us all with taxation and prohibitive demands in our time and more cycle ways, which are such a nuisance, killing businesses. In Nelson now, around houses, you can't park outside your own house because they put cycleways in. The businesses are collapsing because nobody can park outside them anymore. We're prioritising cycleways, which are completely impractical. You know, it's nice to be able to bike, but completely impractical for so many people.
Are the cycleways used much?
And not to the extent they're supposed to be. And it must be very nice for the cyclist. I can understand that. But when businesses have their parking spaces removed, and restaurants in Auckland are saying now they're closing up, it's very sad. And one of the reasons, apart from the fact that the inner city is just so dangerous at the moment in Auckland, people won't go into the inner city at night, and I'm not sure how much better Wellington is. But basically, how can people, they can't park near them, they're not going to walk through dangerous places. And restaurants are closing down. And they're partly blaming us.
You can't, we can't, government. We can't overestimate, that's a better way to put it, we can't overestimate the impact that the UN and the World Health Organization and unelected bureaucrats that attend these organizations have had on our great country.
Mm. And I know. We shouldn't be following the UN at all. It's hostile to democracy.
If they tell us something, we should do the exact opposite. And yet every council, every government department, and it goes from sex education, sexualization and the queering of our kids, to cycleways, to the fact that you cannot afford a house. It's all because of the policies that are promulgated by these international bodies, which we send bureaucrats along to, and they're the new totalitarians. And then you come back to New Zealand and you say, well, why are we doing this? Oh, well, we have to, because we've got to keep faith with our trading partners. Oh, does Singapore?
That's absolutely true.
Does China? No, they don't. Yeah, less. We don't sit there and buy a piece of meat and say, oh, I wonder what the CO2. And of course, it's all, I'm getting it. I'm going to talk too much, Amy, with you. I'm sorry. Ministers are going to email me. But the thing is, they talk absolute nonsense.
Well, we should work on that years ago because they've.
Every minute, carbon neutral doesn't make sense. Does it?
No, of course.
But there's no such thing.
Our politicians, not only that, but the human United Nations puts people, the worst of all the tyrannous countries, top on the Human Rights Commission. Countries like Iran, probably, and China, they'll get the top. You know, we'll put you in charge of the Human Rights Commission. It's farcical. But it's worse. But we could do a bit better, I think, if I just sidetrack you here, Rodney.
Please.
We could do a bit worse. There's two things we do wrongly. And one is, apart from the fact that if we could get the 100 days going in this country would mean, I will put back here, very good people in New Zealand tried to put more power in the hands of people. And they adopted, which never works, not even Switzerland, they don't take much notice of it, the Binding Citizens Initiative referendum. And they have to get 300,000 signatures, which is very hard. And I think some really good people have tried hard. That's not the one the Swiss find useful. They have the, they just insist that they have the facultative referendum, which means that any piece of legislation that passes has to wait for 100 days. And if they don't like it, they just say, no, we're not having this. And the government regards the Swiss people as sovereign. But I was thinking back about one very good reform we could bring in this country, and it's to get rid of someone who digs in as leader like Jacinda Ardern and Luxon, who seems to think he's the corporate head of a company, and that's make sure that every party leader steps down over a year, after a year, rather. If I ask you who the president of Switzerland is, of course, I doubt if you'd be able to tell me. I can't tell myself, I've forgotten. But that's because there are only 7 people in cabinet. Look at ours. 7 people in cabinet, and the finance minister for the previous year steps up and becomes president for a year. And he's primus inter pares, he or she, often she. If we could insist that the leader of any political party step down after a year, acting as chairman of Labour, and then someone else step in, I think we'd have a better chance of bringing back on board those perhaps few people within political parties who are very good value. And things could be debated more easily. Set a time limit. The Romans did this, of course. They didn't trust leaders at all. They didn't want the kings to come back. They got rid of the kings. So they had 2 consuls. And they made sure that each had the right of veto over the other. And they didn't lightly veto the actions of the other, because that same trick would be tried back on them. And after a year, they had to step down. And they didn't want them in Rome anymore. So they sent them out into the provinces to go and make a lot of money. So they left Rome, left their powerful positions reluctantly, but they went out and the compensation was to go back and loot the provinces, which they did. But I think actually changing the political leaders would be a very, very good idea. Because Luxon is he's folding up completely under the co-governance demands. He still wants co-governance of the waterways, and he still wants, and people are pushing Te Reo, which is one of the biggest swindles, to waste children's time in schools by compulsory te reo and saying it's Maori. That's unforgivable. Te reo is not Maori. We've mentioned this before. It's an utter waste of time. There were originally 1,900 words at the most. Someone told me the Tongan language had fewer. 1,900 words in genuine Maori. That's all they needed to cope with the very real environment they had to face, you know, a survival environment.
I'm actually surprised it was so high. Was that the first Maori dictionary?
No, I had it on record way back in my notes, but they're about, God, how many, sorry, they're about metres deep in the study, and they're all pulled out.
Yes. No, don't worry, 1,900 words.
My house was hit by a big landslide, and I had to leave it for, well, it was all cleaned out some time back, so my notes were in a mess. But it was under, maybe for the missionaries, because I've read the early books, the accounts from the missionaries, Henry Williamson and co. And but anyway, it was less than 2,000, it was about 1,900. But English has in common usage, English has, apart from all the words which aren't used at all very much, that's probably closer to 500,000, has 170,000 words. Now, I worked out the percentages. What they're doing at the moment is they're wasting millions, and I believe this is supposed to be Maori Language Week. They're wasting millions on conjuring up new words and promoting Maori Language Week and all the rest of it. But if you look at what they're having to do, they're having to produce 168,000 new te reo words to the equivalent of 170,000 English words.
Of course.
Of the percentage of te reo words, it's really, it's 1.18% of te reo is genuine Maori. 1.18%. And they're saying it's Maori. It's not. Ministry of Social Development in Maori. It's just not on. Co-governance in Maori. Physics in Maori. Chemistry. Mathematics being taught in Maori. We should abandon this whole fuss.
A Maori word for helicopter.
Millions of... Oh, that's good. Every language does take in new words. We know that. De Gaulle used to get very cross when English words were taken into France. They didn't want le football, the football, and le weekend. He was furious. English is borrowed. We've all borrowed, but you don't suddenly fake just all these words that are not Maori at all. Well, the emergency department.
Great difference is, isn't it? It's the great difference between evolution or a free market where it's organic and it's coming up from the people. So the writers of the Oxford English Dictionary listen to what people are saying, read what they're writing and deduce the usage. The difficulty that we have with Maori or te reo is that it's being decided by a government department what the words are, and that never works. You know, people aren't going to be instructed how to talk. It's like Esperanto. It was never going to work because we talk to communicate. We talk to have people understand us, and we use the most efficient way that we can. And this is why te reo is going to fail, because it's not an efficient way to communicate.
They're putting more. Esperanto at least had the chance, it was after World War II. Esperanto had a noble aim, which was to try and get people from different countries to learn the basic, you know, German, France, Croatian, to basically be able to communicate with each other. Now, te reo is quite wicked because no other country in the world uses it. It's not Maori. It's 1,900 words in Maori trying to produce 170,000 English words, so say roughly 2,000 words in genuine Maori versus 170,000 English words, so 168,000 words are going to have to be made up. It's a swindle, and it's replacing so many far more important subjects, in effect, languages in our schools. Why are we trying to impose this? Well, it's the same people. It's the left pushing through again. So confusion, divide and conquer, really. So confusion, and you're away. You begin to.
We have a funny thing too, don't we? Because we go about our lives, and you're very conscious of what you know and what you don't know. So if you're writing a book, you're very conscious of your inadequacies and the difficulties that you have, and you're very aware of people who can write a great book. And likewise, if you're a plumber or a truck driver, you're very conscious of what you can and you can't do. And we naturally think that the people that are running the show, that are running the Ministry of Health, that are running the Ministry of Education, are extremely clever people, way cleverer than we could ever be, because we know we couldn't do it. And what happens is that you actually see them, and if you question them, you realize that they're extraordinarily stupid. They can have a university degree falling out of their briefcase, but they're stupid. Unbelievably stupid.
Roger, that's very much sort of Henry Ford said it, thinking is hard work. Karl Popper promoted it. Karl Popper said this. He said the majority of people who get A's and get top in the exam are highly focused and very clever individuals. We've known them from Wellington. He says not genuinely critical thinkers at all. And they let us all down. And the schools, of course, haven't been promoting it. And to get back, which I'd love to do, just to get back to mention why everyone's believing, well, look, people aren't. People are waking up. And why politicians are still wedded to the whole CO2 is causing global warming nonsense is the I think it's really quite wicked, the wickedness of the media, absolutely refusing to publish any articles from reputable scientists. One of the editors of Stuff, chief editor some years back, said it. We're not going to produce anything criticising the global warming scenario because the science is settled. Well, it's not settled. And the people who said, oh, 97% of scientists support the global warming theory, they lied. They don't. They've never been canvassed. It's, and again, another weapon against the West. But the fact that church leaders are on, but what really I would just like to touch on briefly, if you don't mind, the fact that the church leaders have folded up here is bad because they've lost their calling. It's not hard. There are many people who say, oh, I don't believe in God. In a very condescending fashion. It's interesting, Rodney, as if it makes them slightly superior. Oh, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God. Well, they're really very, very foolish. And I just say, well, haven't you done your research? Because there's plenty of evidence that points to, if they start to investigate, the fact that God's there. Apart from things like there's much new now publicity being surrounding the Shroud of Turin, because it's always been there, and some time back someone tried to say it was a medieval fake. And it was discovered it's nothing of the sort. I've written an article on this and what a lot of very eminent scientists have said about this, because it was burnt in the medieval times. And I think some nuns at Saint-Chapelle in France mended it. And that was the area that was tested from, and they said, oh, no, it came from medieval times. That was the part of the cloth that was tested. But it's been retested, and they've said, no, the Shroud of Turin, which bears the image of a crucified man with the crown of thorns and the bleed, the hands and the feet all pierced and the flogging, the Shroud of Turin, it's the most remarkable thing. And nobody can say how it was produced. There's absolutely nowhere it's a fakery. They've analysed, and it's got pollen on from flowers that were blooming at the time that Christ was crucified. If anyone was in doubt and thought, I'd really love to believe in a God, because there are on the whole, people who are Christians, believe in God, are far happier. And there are people who are hooked on drugs and hooked on alcohol and don't know what to think. And the church is not helping them. Church leaders have let them down. There's one other thing I'd like to mention, too, very quickly, is the apparitions of Our Lady of Fatima. Now, there are fake apparitions and people who say they've seen things, but if you go back, Rodney, to a newspaper of 1917, it's there, you can actually find the newsprint. 70,000 people went to Fatima after months and months of these girls being pilloried because they had seen a vision of a lady, and they were being well and truly bullied and told they would be burned and cut, you know, they'd be put in all hot oil and various things to stop them telling lies. And they weren't telling lies. And on that day in 1917, when Our Lady had told them that they would see a sign, and the very hard-bitten reporters that came across to Portugal to see all this, they saw the sign. They saw the sign that seemingly spinning across the sky. And many saw an apparition. Many claimed later, not all did, but many claimed, many thousands claimed later, they saw an apparition of Our Lady holding the child Jesus with St. Joseph. Now, that's extraordinary. 70,000 people, how many of these managed to lie through their teeth? Did it happen or didn't it happen? Why don't church leaders say, yes, I know belief is hard. I know we're moving into a secular age because Christianity has been mocked so much. But check out the newspaper account of what people saw at Fatima in 1917, apart from some other apparitions since. check out the Shroud of Turin, which bears the pollen of flowers in bloom at the time when Christ died, and grain and other things, and try and explain the Shroud of Turin. I'm glad I got a chance to mention that, because I think the church leaders aren't doing their job.
I have been reading everything I can about Jesus. And, of course, no one who's literate can deny that Jesus existed.
He could.
The issue is whether he was the Son of God and was resurrected.
Of course.
But the accounts are so amazing. And I read what he says, Amy. And I had read a lot previously about Rome. And I realized...
About Rome?
Yes. I realized what a revolutionary he was. Because no one thought anything of slaves. No one thought anything of wiping out Carthage. It was just a done thing. Wiping out a million in Gaul. No big deal.
The Romans were very cruel.
But Jesus came, had no army, wrote nothing, and just spoke for about 3 years, I understand. And what he said was so revolutionary. And it's actually how we think today, even if you're an atheist.
Yes, that's so interesting. Remember Lloyd Gehring, the Christian minister from down south, tried to destroy that.
Terrible.
He was a thoroughly evil man. I was down there when the controversy started. Some people
1967.
Said, oh, he's well-meaning. Yeah, they said he's well-meaning. He wasn't well-meaning. He was just trying to destroy. He said Christ's bones lie in Palestine. But as St. Paul said, it all depends on the resurrection. And you're right. Jesus was two things. He was either an amazing con man, or he was seriously deluded, or he was who he said he was. And the fact that the apostles who followed him were willing to die extremely painfully because they had seen him after the resurrection. It would be very hard to persuade someone to be crucified. And as St. Peter said, he wasn't worthy to die on the cross the same way. He wanted to be crucified upside down. I think he felt very keenly the fact that he had betrayed Christ three times on the night before he was actually crucified. And Christ said, Peter said he would never leave him. And Christ said, before the clock crows three times. Yes, that's right. Christianity has spread right around the world, but it's under severe attack. And now Christians are being persecuted worldwide. And there's no reason for that, too. There is a growing... It's amazing, really, how all the really damaging movements teaching children that they can turn themselves into boys or girls, which is an absolute lie, and persuading them. There's a woman doctor who's been hauled up, thank heavens, in the United States now, because she's been actually removing girls' breasts if they think they're males or want to be males. It's a wickedness which is almost...
How on earth could you be a human being trained as a doctor and do that?
Well, how could you be a human being trained as a doctor, as Planned Parenthood, which are behind those videos in New Zealand, been financing them? They're boasting about pulling out babies in parts and being able to sell them. And how can you sit there and talk about reproductive rights, which is a lovely euphemism for saying that you're going to kill an unborn child? And what really annoyed me in New Zealand, or worried me, was that when that bill came through, Jacinda Ardern and David Seymour both voted, I must try and find out who else did, both voted against any comfort or medicine being given to a baby that could be aborted and would live, one perhaps in the 7th or 8th or 9th month. And overseas this debate's going on. It hasn't been voted on in America yet. But they voted against a baby being given help or kept alive or kept warm. How could you do that? And same, of course, is backing euthanasia. And yet he's so right on marriage issues, but ACT lost a lot of votes because of this.
I'm, of course, an ACT man. And my party has become a party of death.
Did you found ACT?
I was involved the first day. I was the first president.
I thought you were.
And now, look, they have policies I agree with. But I can't get around this endless wanting to have abortions and talking about it and euthanasia. And you're thinking, why do they want to kill all the time?
Oh, because it's women, you see. Some women will come and say, you know, a dreadful thing to women will go and have backstreet abortions. There are an awful lot of lies told. It's the same way if you say to a child, if a parent now says, look, I'm sorry, dear, you can't you simply can't mutilate yourself to pretend you're becoming a man. And the parents can now virtually be arrested for this, and it will stretch to New Zealand too. But you get told, yes, there's a site I checked the other day, Aotearoa or something or other, which tells girls or boys who want to change sex. And, of course, they never can. It doesn't matter how much. No. These poor children mutilate themselves. They never can change sex. And it tells them, just say that if you try to stop me, you'll destroy my mental health. How about that for a weapon?
And how crazy is it that our parliament passed legislation that it's a criminal offence to try and talk a young person
Yes, I know.
Out of being gay, presumably having the operation.
You mean counselling.
Gay conversion therapy. Gay conversion therapy.
They said it was wicked, and they've produced all sorts of extreme ideas why it would be terribly, terribly dangerous and damage these people irrevocably. Roger, you're right. And what got me about Parliament is what really upset me was not one MP voted. No, they did. There were some against that. There were some good National Party members who didn't agree with us. But when it came to the issue of going back and changing your birth certificate to say, no, I wasn't born female, every single MP voted for it.
I know.
We need to change the party. We need to change the party leaders once a year, because I think you'd have a chance of more.
Well, if
ideas
you had
coming
your 100 days, if that bill had to lie for 100 days, and we could get a number, we would get that in a heartbeat. They wouldn't even try to put that bill through because they know New Zealanders would reject it.
It's absolutely true. That's what happened in Switzerland. Someone said,
I know. It's why I love your book. It's got the solution. Here's an interesting thing. So I can go.
I wish more people could get to it, Ronnie.
I could change my birth certificate today and say that on 16th of December 1956, Margaret Annie Hyde had a delightful little girl. And her name was Rodina Hyde. And I would be called.
I've got a brother. Yeah.
Rodina Hyde, that would be my name from henceforth, and I could access every woman's changing shed, every girl's toilets, every girl's sports, the girl's prison, woman's prisons, a woman's ward, rape crisis centre, woman's refuge centre. I could, because I am legally a woman. I could walk in looking like I do now.
Yes, and you could go to my.
It's even worse than this, because they set it up that you can't even tell that my birth certificate was changed.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Oh no, this is a part of the legislation. Because that would be discriminatory.
And every single, we see, we mustn't discriminate. It's very important to discriminate. It's dreadfully
of course
important
it is.
To discriminate. You know that.
Of course it is. But gets worse, right?
16th of December.
That's my birthday.
I've got a brother born on lots of 16ths in our family. My birthday's on the 16th, not December. I've got a son with a birthday on the 16th. I've got a brother on the 16th of December. It's a good number, Rodney. Take a lotto ticket.
I will. Oh, no, I can't gamble. I've never bought a lotto
no,
ticket
I
in my
bother.
Life. Hey, tell me this, though.
I'm joking.
Isn't this? Yeah. Every MP in Parliament voted for it.
I know.
So let's say I'm a voyeur or I'm an exhibitionist. A voyeur, I like looking at peeping. I'm a peeping Tom. I'm an exhibitionist, what we used to call flashes, and there are men like this because men tend to deviancy very readily, or they make up the deviance, or I'm a paedophile, or I'm a rapist. I can become a woman and gain access to the woman's changing area.
Now, that's what I meant by the age of unreason. What has happened to our politicians that have allowed these things? What's happened to our hierarchies? What's happened?
Yes.
The world's gone mad and the spread of evil. It's almost
we've gone through Roy Kerr's black hole.
Yeah, and it happens almost simultaneously. That's the interesting thing. And it gets worse. And I think, what's going to happen next? What new evil can they promote? Transgender was one of the last, wasn't it? It became same-sex marriages, which is farcical.
I think I know what the next one is.
What's going to be next?
Oh, I think there's going to be a move to get rid of the age of consent.
Oh, I think you're right, actually. I was just thinking that.
Because everything
that Australian says,
everything
who's Australian who says you should be able to have sex? It's a Peter Singer who says you should be able to have sex with animals. That's probably on target too.
Wasn't he a nut bar?
Yeah, of course he was invited to the writers' conferences in New Zealand. The writers' conferences are great. That's the sort of person they invite over. Of course, they got rid of me. They're very, very left wing. Actually, it's interesting because there's one of my books, and I stopped sending them out for review because another Trevor Agnew, would simply say, oh, don't bother. I didn't bother to just tell you to stop reading this book because you wouldn't get past the first chapter. It's such a bore. He was great, and he ended up with a judge of the Children's Writing Awards each year too. But from someone like Kerry Greenwood in Australia, she read Who Will Speak to the Dreamer. And I'm telling this because it's part of the fight back, really, because I don't like them. I don't want to be a pushover. I'd fight for anyone. And I thought, who is it the jurist statement said, if you don't fight for yourself, who will? But if you fight for yourself alone, what are you? That's interesting, isn't it? Anyway, Kerry Greenwood wrote back, bless her heart. She put Miss Bryony Fisher television series out. She's a very nice woman. And she's an award-winning writer in Australia. And someone, you may remember David Gregg, that was a David, who took my book over to her. He was her partner. And she said, I just finished your book. She said, I loved it. She said, when I finished, I started to read it all over again. Now, how many writers or how many people would bother to read a book all over again? And a son of mine read a book of mine he hadn't read the other day. He was in England, and he picked up one, and he said it was some Whatever Shadows They Come. And he said, but this is amazing. It's very nice of him after all this time. He said, it's amazing. He said, it reminds me of Roger Zelazny's Princess and Amber.
How wonderful.
Amber series. I don't know if you read those.
I've only read two books twice. I've read a lot of books many times. I've read David Copperfield, God knows how many times. There was a time I read it every year. But I finished Heart of Darkness, and I finished it, and I found myself reading it faster and faster because it gets this amazing pace. And I finished it, and I just turned to the first page and started reading again.
It's such a
wonderful book. And the other book is a huge, huge book, 3,000 pages. I read to the end and started page one again because it was so long. I wanted to enjoy the start all over again because I'd sort of forgotten how it started. That was Robert Caro's wonderful biography of Lyndon B. Johnson, who hadn't interested me up until the point I read his book. It's a beautiful book. It's an amazing book. Oh, my goodness. Can I tell you about this book, Amy? Robert Caro.
The biography of Johnson.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
And he's 80-something, and he's still got one volume to go. And he's been writing it for 40 years, releasing volumes. And
I didn't know Johnson would merit so many volumes. It's interesting.
When you read about his life, it's extraordinary. And he was the consummate politician, and not a good way, if you know what I mean. But you read it and you're fascinated. What motivates Robert Caro is how power gets exercised. So he wasn't interested in, oh, well, you have a president and you have the Senate and you have the Congress. He was interested and how people could exercise power over others. And Lyndon Johnson was the greatest exponent of that in modern times.
Oh, that's very interesting. I didn't know that.
And when this man writes, still to this day in New York, he writes on a typewriter.
Oh, how interesting.
He types the page up, Amy, and gets a drawing pin and pins it on his wall. And he pins the pages up on the wall and edits them as he looks at them.
He must and have a very big room.
Book itself, well, he probably does. I mean, he agonizes over two pages. The book itself is a masterpiece. There is a bit, a piece about Lyndon Johnson's, one of his, well, his special mistress. She is the most remarkable, I can't think of her name, is the most remarkable woman. And it's a remarkable story. Look, the whole thing is amazing. The book is, I don't care less about Lyndon Johnson, but the book is stunning. Never read a book like it.
That's so interesting. Poor wife. His wife must have been pretty amazing too.
She was amazing because she was a very plain woman. I don't mean that negatively, but like she, and I don't know how I meant that, but you know what I mean? She was a lovely woman.
I do.
And Lyndon
Johnson. She was a lovely woman.
Johnson was surrounded by these vivacious socialites who, you know, the sort of famous woman, and they loved him. He had that magnetic power. He had power. He turned up to the Senate.
Power, full stop.
He turned up to the Senate in 1948, and the Senate hadn't been able to do anything for 60 years. And the process was in the Senate, you'd turn up there, and for 20 years you'd behave yourself, a strict seniority, and you'd end up as a chairman of a committee after 20 years. In 1.5 years, nothing happened in that Senate unless Johnson said it was going to happen. And if you needed anything stopped, he would stop it. No one has seen anything like him. And he had this amazing ability to, you know, ingratiate himself to people, to bully people. He had dirt files on people. He had teams working for him. He could raise money corruptly because he'd give out contracts. And so he basically funded the Democratic Party. And the Kennedys hated him. And he didn't think he could beat, he got outsmarted by JFK and his team, who started earlier, and he realized he couldn't get the nomination, and he agreed to be their vice president.
That's right.
And when Kennedy was shot, Lyndon Johnson was magnificent. They were on the verge of a nuclear war when Kennedy was shot because the Russians were being blamed. And that's why he hastily put together the Warren Commission to just sign it off and get on with America again. Because...
Interesting.
Oh, it's a beautiful book. Oh, you've got to read it. Oh, my goodness. I've talked so much about that. I'm going to have so many emails and texts saying... Amy
Talk. Yes, you're right. Interesting. Now, someone said, Joseph Kennedy said at the time, how many votes does this boy need to win? He said, right, we'll get them. Someone said it was the first of the elections that the Democrats actually bought. I wonder. Postal
No, no, no. If you read if you read Lyndon Johnson's this book, back in the 1920s, they were cheating like crazy.
I know. They wouldn't excoriate Trump. Do you remember when Trump was president? When Trump was president, every single day our media would say something completely derogatory about Trump. But when Biden's ratbag son was, you know, was teaming up with the Russians and the Chinese and the whole laptop scandal, not a word from our mainstream media. Frank Hayden would turn in his grave. Do you remember Frank Hayden?
I do, lovely man.
Oh, amazing. Frank was wonderful and he had some marvellous sayings. He didn't like to be rang up. A telephone was there for him to ring up people, but nobody was to ring up him. He cut his telephone as a personal weapon. He was my editor when I was writing the Dominion, those Dominion columns that got me in so much trouble with the writing establishment, because I was looking at education. I'll tell you what, Ron, you must talk about the ministry sometime. It has to be disbanded. And the teacher unions, I remember being asked once by the Business Roundtable, what was the most dangerous internal threat in New Zealand? What was the most dangerous organisation? I said, the teacher unions. The teacher and the Maori supremacy movement. They said, overseas. I said, China. And I think I would still back these nowadays. The teacher unions are really bad news. And I say this, having been a former secondary teacher, having majored in Latin and English. And I bet you don't know that this is interesting, that Enoch Powell said that everyone should learn Latin. And someone said, well, what use is Latin to a plumber? What use is Latin to a plumber? And he said, it would probably make him a far better plumber. How about
indeed.
That?
Indeed. Enoch Powell, of course, was a classicist. He was amazingly clever, because wasn't he like 23 and a full professor of classics at Cambridge or Oxford or somewhere?
But he was a very clever man, but he got into trouble for actually saying what was going to happen with uncontrolled immigration. He used that phrase, or someone's put it to him, the rivers of blood. But yes, he meant there will be multiculturalism will not work, and it hasn't. And I'd like to know what the criteria are for importing people into New Zealand, because I think we need to be very careful about
that. And, of course, Enoch Powell was destroyed by that. And, of course, the River of Blood is a reference back to Rome, because some leader said it then. But he was proved right.
Yes, of course he was proved right. People who prove right get themselves into real trouble, don't they? Truths become untruth. The war upon truth, which the media are helping. Yeah, Frank would be very unhappy. He was a great man.
Oh, dear. We have these amazing discursive, is that the word, discussions where we wander all over the place. And I love it. I feel as I want to be talking to you about 10 things at once. You make a sentence, Amy, and it's so pregnant with ideas that I want to run off in 3 different directions to explore it with you. Then you've come out with another sentence, and I want to cover that as well. And then I end up excitedly telling you something and not listening. But you're the most wonderful person.
Far from it.
In fact,
I get in trouble because I have to excuse myself sometimes talking to the children, and they might say, Mum, hang on, you were talking about something else. And I've gone off as an angle, of course, because it reminds me of something else. So I have to say in my own defense, I'm a born storyteller. Actually, I got told that once. A lot of things I'm very, very bad at, really bad at, but I can tell stories. So I hope people who are looking for books for their children and who would like to help me in my fight back here might go and look at my website. That would be lovely.
Isn't it amazing? I'm looking up Enoch Powell. In the aftermath of the speech, that was his Rivers of Blood speech, where he was basically attacked by his own party and tossed out of Parliament, several polls suggested that 67 to 82% of the British population agreed with him. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, then he was a populist. Now, when that happens now, and people get they're not elites at all, but the hierarchy, so people who allow transgenderism and promote these stupid ideas or these wicked ideas, when they do, they say, oh, he's a populist. When people speak, they say, oh, you're a populist. That's become the new derogatory term, but you know that. In other words, this is what ordinary, so-called ordinary people realise and speak. Populism, Rodney, no, can't have that. Can't have people's ideas.
Tell us about how we get hold of your wonderful books, and particularly your children's books, once again. So people that have been listening to you, enjoying you, because I tell you, dear listeners, Amy is a beautiful, beautiful writer, a beautiful storyteller, but she's been deplatformed. And so you won't read a review of an Amy book. Oh, no. You won't see it in the schools or the libraries. Oh, no.
Some,
but they're wonderful.
There's a few left in the libraries, but yep. Well, thank you, Ronnie. Well, it's www, of course. It's just www.amybrook, one word, amybrooke.co.nz. That should get you there. If anyone has any trouble ordering, now I've had the site moved somewhere else. Actually, I haven't had time to go back and revise it. And you can see the books and see the reviews. I just gave up putting reviews up. Really good reviews from children and parents, of course, not from the literary establishment. But except in the beginning, I remember one very nice woman saying the duck that went to heaven was her very favourite New Zealand story. My book sold better in Melbourne through News Weekly, which is a great Australian publication, and they had a book, Freedom Publishing, below, and they sold that. One man, old man, came and he was crying, and he said, that was the most beautiful story I've ever read. So it was very nice. So there were some good people here in the early days before it was worked out that I was the same person writing those Dominion columns and saying, look, be careful what you're doing with the Treaty of Waitangi. Jeffrey Palmer is what he's done is so very, very foolish.
No, very bad.
And I have to end, but
I want to end like we started with. We had Roy Kerr. I've now looked up Enoch Powell. Hear this. Enoch Powell grew up quite modestly, of modest means, but he got a scholarship to connect King Edward's School in Birmingham in 1925.
Yeah.
Listen to this. Powell won all three of the school's classic prizes in, I can't pronounce it, Thucydides, Herodotus, and Divinity in the Fifth Form. 2 or 3 years younger than anyone else had won them. He also began to translate Herodotus's histories and completed the translation of the first part when he was 14.
Goodness me.
He entered the sixth form 2 years before his classmates. And you think, and he became an MP. And, of course, they had to get rid of him. Amy?
They don't like they don't like clever MPs. It's quite true. The public never, ever celebrates virtually anyone clever except in a crisis, as with Churchill. Sorry, Rodney.
Yes, and they love having Joe Biden, who wasn't even at home.
Oh, please.
And Kamala Harris, who's hardly at home because they're so empty. Okay, Amy Book, send us a text, everyone, please. I know I talk too much, so you don't need to say that. I'll try and do better. I'm new back, and I got so excited talking to Amy. Send me a text at 2057. Email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. And please, Amy, you'll come back.
Thank you. It's a joy to talk to you.
Oh, you're so wonderful. Hey, have a look at Robert Caro's book, please.
I will. Okay. I promise. I got interested already.
Take care. There you are, everyone. That was realitycheck.radio. Please send us a text, email. You know the drill. Oh, Amy Brooke, what a woman. How wonderful is it? Oh, you sort of feel as though you need a day because it's so wonderful talking to her, and she's got such this pleasant personality and voice. She's just a dream to talk to.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.